Hello and welcome to my files. It's just a bog-standard late autumn in the north of England, 1900. Men and women are enjoying the occasional pint of Fawpney ale.
Daily Chronicle, 30th of November, 1900. 21 deaths at Salford. A return prepared by the medical officer of Salford Workhouse Infirmary shows that the epidemic has been in progress there for many months.
170 patients have been admitted suffering from alcoholic neuritis. 21 fatal, 17 women and 4 men. Women seem to be more susceptible than the men to whatever it was that was. And that would be unusual for alcohol in itself.
Daily Express. Beer scourge. 550 more cases reported yesterday.
Well, that's a pretty big outbreak by anybody's criteria, even in 1900.
Fresh theories and new outbreaks. One of the leading brewers in Chester advances the theory that it may be due to cheap tea.
A brewer would blame tea. Well, there's nearly always a bit of debate, particularly in the early stages of some sort of event like an epidemic, as to what the cause might be.
Poisoned beer! Manchester, 2,000 cases! £50,000 worth of beer in the sewers!
So that's pretty big by any standards, even if you're talking of cholera and historic epidemics. Thousands, you're into the big league.
Dr. Reynolds, visiting physician at the Manchester Workhouse, was asked by the coroner if he would say how he found out the cause of the cases. There's been a great increase in cases of shingles during the last 5 months. He found that the only drug which caused shingles when a drug was the cause was arsenic. On the evening of November the 17th, some beer was brought to him which had been purchased by a medical student.
Medical student. Witness examined it the following day and found arsenic in it. He made a post-mortem examination on the body of Mrs. Dyer on November the 23rd. The lungs were dropsical, the liver was very much enlarged in a state of chronic inflammation. The kidneys were also enlarged.
The cause of death was arsenical poisoning.
One of the things you have to have, which perhaps is the most difficult thing, is to come up with the idea in the first place, and then you can test the idea. Actually, the tests for arsenic were quite well established, because people have been poisoning people with arsenic for a long time, so the sort of forensic science of arsenic was quite well established.
The source of arsenic was quickly identified as glucose supplied to the brewers by Bostock's. Bostock's converted sugar to glucose using sulfuric acid. It was arsenic in the sulfuric acid that was to blame.
Daily Mail. The chairman of Bostock & Co. continued, "I am not a chemist, nor are any of my colleagues on the board. I can therefore only surmise that the reason of the non-discovery of arsenic in the sugar was owing to the fact that none was looked for."
That's what the heads of companies always say when their company's involved in some sort of problem. Well, we didn't know, we're not experts, nobody told us, even though it was our product and we were selling it, making a profit from it. Still, not our problem.
Warnings 2 years ago. A member of the Beer Materials Committee writes to call attention to his minority report dated January 1899 in condemnation of the use of poisonous ingredients in beer, including the employment of sulfuric acid for inverting sugar. He maintains that it is quite possible that if his warnings had been heeded, the recent and present most lamentable sacrifice of life and health might have been averted.
Well, yes. Again, this is not uncommon where you find that when a disaster happens that people had been talking about the circumstances that could lead to a disaster for quite a while before. It's not unusual. What we often find is that it takes a disaster in order for policy to change. You have to actually have the outcome of the problem fully demonstrated in full public horror for any action to be taken. The Northumberland report on the big, enormous foot-and-mouth outbreak in 1967, there was a minority report there where one of the people was very keen on vaccinating animals. It wasn't accepted at the time. It still hasn't been accepted. It may be accepted in the future. Who knows?
The deceased are women in humble circumstances, one being Alice Riley of Lodge Street, Queen's Road, and the other Christine McCulloch of Gorton.
Yes, humble circumstances, innocent victims, basically, which, of course, is what they are.
Daily Express, 18th of December. Poisoned beer. Five more deaths reported yesterday.
Even when the problem has been actually removed, people have been affected by consuming it before it was removed, may still go on to die. And this creates a feeling of uncertainty in the public, because they can see that the outbreak is not over. Then they're questioning whether the measures that have been taken are sufficient and so on. You have to be very cautious until you know the full facts, which when the outbreak is in progress, you don't, or else you'd have been able to stop it before it happened.
Buchanan, medical officer. In Manchester, the public analyst, Mr. Estcourt, has been giving several surprising statements about arsenical beer. In the first instance, he wrote to the papers saying that there was no arsenic in beers he had examined, and ridiculed the notion that glucose could contain arsenic. Then he found arsenic in further samples.
Surely it's bad when the public analyst gets it wrong.
Yes, yes. Well, I mean, the public analyst is put there really to protect the public. The public analyst was about the only defence against this sort of thing. So if the analyst gets it wrong, well...
Shorthand Writing Department, London News Agency, Fleet Street. Sir, we are taking a verbatim shorthand note of the resumed inquests at Manchester in January next on the bodies of the persons alleged to have died from poisoned beer. As your department is instituting an inquiry into the matter, may we supply you with a transcript of our notes on the customary terms? An answer at your earliest convenience will be esteemed a favour. I am, sir, your obedient servant.
On the bodies of the persons alleged to have died from poisoned beer. Yes. Well, I suppose that's the sort of official language that's used, that there's a dryness about it, isn't there? That you have the sort of euphemisms and so on.
As you prophesied, both Manchester and Salford are now beginning to clamour for prosecutions. But in each place, there seems to be considerable difficulty with the public analyst, each of whom appears to have committed himself at an early stage by declaring the absence of arsenic from samples, and afterwards to have had to correct his statement. But as to this, I shall get more information later.
Well, that's again par for the course. You find that agencies don't have a similar view about these things, and are particularly jealous to safeguard their own interests as well. And once they've taken a position, they find it quite difficult to pull off it. If it differs from another agency, each will fight its own corner very vigorously. As a scientist, if you want to influence, a government department, you have to work out which is the one that you should be trying to influence, because you may go to the wrong one and just make more trouble for yourself. That agency will then be fighting with another agency. The common result would be that nothing happens, of course, that it disappears into the sort of, you know, into the sands of the bureaucracy.
Daily Express, 13th of February, 1901. 4,000 cases, huge mortality.
I suppose people dying in workhouse infirmaries, people died in workhouse infirmaries anyway, and the fact that they were dying for something connected with beer, well, surprise, surprise. They were poor people, they couldn't afford to buy, you know, high-quality drinks. So I suppose you could say, yes, well, they were just casualties of that period, you know, the end of the Victorian era kind of thing. One would almost consider to be just part of life's rich tapestry, or death's rich tapestry, if you like. Yeah, yeah. It is amazing that it hasn't survived as a cause célèbre. Outbreaks which are much smaller have had much higher publicity than this. People were dying like flies, and yet the story doesn't seem to have made a hit at all.
Dr. H. W. Davis records the following cases. M. H. L., age 28. 1.5 pints daily.
The woman, aged 37, 1.5 pints.
J.C., male, aged 56, 3 or 4 pints daily. E.H., female, aged 43, about 2 pints
another
daily.
Another woman, 1.5 pints daily.
E.K., female, aged 40, 0.5 pint occasionally.
These aren't outrageously great amounts of beer. Even if you do double them for, you know, you automatically double it. So there was a lot of arsenic in that beer.
The Daily Chronicle. The pure beer movement A numerously attended meeting was held in the Town Hall, Reading.
You could say that that is one of the sort of examples of movement where people are looking for beer that's made from what they call pure natural products and so on, taking off. Of course, it's always more complicated than it appears, but never mind.
They're pretty marvellous, these files. Is one of the functions for civil servants to learn lessons from the past?
Oh, absolutely. It's a bit of an obsession I have that we're actually quite good at learning from our mistakes, but we're also very good at forgetting the lessons we've learnt as well. The mistakes are heeded and action is taken, and then after a short time we go back perhaps to where we were before.
Dr. Campbell Brown, in his capacity of public analyst, has lately been giving certificates to the effect that samples of beer submitted to him contain no more arsenic than is unavoidable in any beer.
Contain no more arsenic than is unavoidable, in inverted commas, then in the margin, two exclamation marks, in red pencil, underlined. He's definitely suspicious of the motives here, because this contemporary events at Cadbury's are a little bit reminiscent, where they agreed that within the company that a little bit of salmonella would do nobody any harm, which was microbiologically unsound, but never mind. Yes, and here we are, chronic alcoholic poisoning prior to June 1900, with a considerable portion of the cases which have been looked on as true alcoholic neuritis have in reality been cases of very chronic arsenical poisoning. So they're putting the clock back several years. Particularly poor people, the number of cases that come to light is less than the actual number of cases that have occurred.
Why did it take them so long to notice?
Most of these people wouldn't come to having any kind of detailed analysis of what they died of. Their certificates would be signed by a doctor in the workhouse. They died of neuritis, which is a pretty vague sort of diagnosis anyway. Who's going to question that? Coroner wouldn't be interested. They hadn't died a violent death. You have to have really very substantial numbers of people dying for it to register as an abnormality in the mortality statistics, which are always collected in retrospect. And we know that they're very poor as well in terms of death certification, for example. There are big debates going on right now about how to improve it, because everybody accepts that it is very poor in the sense of writing down what somebody died of. It took a long time for people to work out that Dr. Shipman was murdering people.
Did anyone go to prison for accidentally killing off well over 200, maybe 300 or 400 people? Of course not. In the Victorian age, as in our Elizabethan era, corporate manslaughter doesn't happen. It's one less worry for those busy executives when making, or not making, decisions that could eventually kill off one of you listening today. Take care, and drink only in moderation.